So, hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the advice podcast that was meant to be a simple advice show that has somehow evolved into a strange meditation on modern male friendships, which is how I describe the show to people who I'm certain won't listen to it to fact check me. I am one half of this podcast, Daniel O'Brien, a writer, comedian, historian, currently for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, and I am giant as always by... with Soren Bowie. Soren, take it
I away. Love that you lost steam in the middle of your own accolades. That, like, that's where you're like boring yourself. I'm Soren Bowie. Sort of like a teen heartthrob, really past his prime. Doesn't really have much going on anymore. That was sort of going to be my whole career, and it never really panned out.
Yeah. Any regrets?
No. I mean, I did it all. I almost got on Tiger Beat. I mean, I don't know, honestly, how close I was. I tried to get on Tiger Beat. Wrote a whole column about it. Tried to really drive some attention. Mm-hmm. And had some young girls tell me they thought I was cute. I mean, that felt pretty good.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But that was years ago. And at this point, it's just this long, slow decline. It's just a slow downhill to the end.
Okay. Speaking of things that get worse with time, bacon, how's it going?
Hey, Dan. It's going okay.
Good. Bacon is our, what do you want to call yourself? Because we've been calling you business daddy and CFO and various other things. President? I don't know. What do you consider your role here?
For some legal forms, I put co-founder. But that was just because I think we had to put that because I was filing the legal forms. But I think all the things you guys say are okay. That's okay. One person had a real, just genuine, honest reaction because they said, it was in a review. They said, I love the podcast. I don't understand why they have their CFO. And then in parentheses, he said, chief financial officer, I think, on the podcast. He said, if he just does business stuff, why do they let him talk? Which I'm also, I think, okay with that take.
You should also add review reader to Bacon's long list of accolades.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because that's the only way I find out anyone watches this or listens to this podcast.
Thanks to Postmates for supporting Quick Question. When you need red wine at 4 p.m., sushi at 9 p.m., a breakfast burrito at 8 a.m., and ibuprofen at 10 a.m., Postmate it. For a limited time, Postmates is giving you $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. Download the Postmates app and use code QQ. Speaking of those listeners, we are, of course, Quick Question with Soren and Daniel. And you, our listeners, prefer to be called quickhole.com, a name I came up with that is a play on clickhole and one that I immediately refused to Google. If a website already exists, I'm not interested.
I wonder what a quick hole would look like. I'm gonna Google it.
Okay. I'll just sit here and vamp while you Google it.
Please.
Bacon, I took a kickboxing class yesterday. I signed up for a kickboxing gym.
Were you able to can you kick very high? Because I found that whatever things I've done in my life has not prepared me to kick like over my knee level, basically.
No, I can kick higher than my knee level, but I can't kick very high. And also a thing that I'm finding that is really hurting my status as a kickboxing phenom is that I knock myself off balance when I try to kick. And I feel like any opponent worth his salt would take advantage of that particular vulnerability. Because I don't fall when I kick, but like only by the grace of God do I not fall.
Yeah. I always think that like if I ever was in a fight, I would have one good try to kick in me. And then the rest of it would go downhill because of that.
Would you do like a front kick or a roundhouse or what's your kick?
When I was a child, I would always imagine.
Also love that you think that if you were in a fight, kicking would even be on the table.
When I was a child, I would imagine myself doing like roundhouse kicks if I like ever like fantasize about being a karate situation. But now I've seen enough videos where I think the only move is run as fast as you can and like try and jump forward kick. Because I don't think I could. I think I would fall down. My hips aren't flexible enough.
I would like to get really good at kicking, because like I don't seek out fights. I don't want to be in fights or anything like that. But I felt like I feel like if I needed to, I carry so much weight in the lower half of my body, and you get so much momentum just from twisting and throwing your weight in a direction. So I feel like I would be at my most lethal if I can just somehow coax my leg in the direction that I want it to be. Much more dangerous than if I'm punching someone, because I don't have the best punchers in the world. But I feel like if I could just throw one of these fucking tree trunk legs at somebody with enough force, then I could really do some damage.
Yeah, I feel like Soren would be someone who's like sneakily good at kicking if he needed to.
I'm dangerously inflexible. I can't do.
Who is that dangerous to?
Me.
Okay.
It can be a real problem. Do you all want to know about quick holes?
I do.
Some quick research revealed that quickholes.com is a site. It's a dating app, which is a really funny name for a dating app.
I mean, like, is dating in quotes?
Yes.
Okay.
But it's also apparently a scam. That this is like a scam website, and so there's the results are you can get when you look up Quick Holes or Quick Hole, you get quickholes.com, and then you get a bunch of people saying, is Quick Holes a scam? So I'm not really sure what they're doing on the site that's so dangerous, but
at the end of the day, that's what our audience prefers to be called, and you gotta respect it. We can get into the show, or do you have anything you want to chat about before we get into the very serious show that we do?
Is that your dog?
No, that's, I'm not going to name what her apartment number is, but it's her dog down the way.
Okay. All right. How's life, Dan?
And they're always like that. They're always like that, Soren.
I have a question for you.
And I think, but I can't prove it. No, I'm not done. I think, but I can't prove that her dogs have been peeing in the stairwell.
Holy shit.
Someone's dogs have been.
That's big if true.
The worst dogs on the floor.
And so are those dogs, do you think, responsible for the note that one guy left?
Which note?
So remember at the down at the bottom?
Oh, no. That happened on the second floor. No one up here did that.
Okay. Is your dog okay?
My dog is great. He is, he's been staying with my parents for a while because I didn't want to pay expensive New York kennel fees when I was traveling to Thailand. And so my parents took him. But they're not going to just like drive up from North Carolina to see me and drop off Jackson when I get back from Thailand. So they're only going to come back here in mid-February when they have cause to be here. So they've just had him for weeks and will have him for the next couple of weeks. So I've been like sans dog for the first time in a while.
Is that good or bad?
I mean, there are good and bad things. Like I really miss his company. I miss, coming home to him and cuddling with him. And I miss like, he's a really great motivator to help me start my day, because no matter what, I have to get dressed and take him outside. And that is a great way to wake me up no matter what. On the pros of his not being here, I've managed to go out in evenings more than I normally do. Mm-hmm. Cause I'm such a home buddy and I'm always chained to him. And this past week, there have been days where it was like, I'm going to leave work and I'm going to go in the direction that is not the one that is towards my home. I'm going to go out and I'm going to do things and I'm going to see what life in the big city is like. And I did that and I don't care for it.
You sow the oats and it's done. I found that having been a father for a while, that there are things that I used to dread that now I really look forward to. Like traveling by plane alone is this crazy novelty to me now. We're going with work on a ski trip soon, and I'm not only looking forward to the trip, but I'm looking forward to the flight there, that I'm going to be on a flight watching movies by myself. I can sleep if I want to. It's just my time, even though it's stuck in a seat that I just don't get any other time in my life. And it's this thing that everyone else is like, oh, but the trip is so long. And I'm so pumped. It's the same with like driving, driving long
distances. You're going on a work ski trip? I'm sorry to derail this.
Yeah, work ski trip.
Speak on that.
So every year, we try and do at least two trips. There's an end of the year trip after we've done our last table. And then there's also a trip in the middle of the year where we go off and do something together as a group, just the writers. And, generally it's been a ski trip. I don't know why I'm like pussyfooting around where we're actually going. I feel like there's something in me that's probably right. And I'm just not, I can't articulate like why I don't want anyone to know this. Oh, if we have listeners there, I don't want to run into them. That's what it is.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. We go on a ski trip. It's just to get everybody unified, basically, to people that you're going to have to spend all this time in a room with, breaking stories. Like, it's just building camaraderie so that you actually like the people that you work with. You know, like what they try and do with those team building exercises at other jobs that don't actually work. It's like, no, you take people on a fun trip that don't talk about work, don't talk about team building at all. And those people will naturally, just in being proximity to each other outside of the office, will eventually find something that they have in common, things that they like about each other.
Right. I've been skiing once before and it was really fun right up until it wasn't fun anymore. And
was it because you took a spill or was it you just got tired?
No, I got tired. Like I took a bunch of spills and was fine with them because like this is what I signed up for. And then I reached a certain point in the evening, I guess, where I'm at the top of the hill and I'm like, well, if I go down, there's a chance I'll fall. And I've fallen a bunch of times before and other times I didn't. But if I just go to the like lodge, then I won't fall. So I'm going to, I just reached a point where I've fallen enough times that it was like, let me do the thing that I definitely won't fall, or like, I probably won't fall. Cause let's be honest, I fall a lot and bump into things in general all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's like an end of the day where you're a little tired and you know that just like trying to hold that edge is going to, it's going to hurt your calves or whatever a little bit more. And you're like, what if I just didn't? And it's like taking your hands off the wheel. And you're like, maybe if I crash, it wouldn't feel that bad. And right. So, and you don't want to even get to that point. You're like, well, why would I even risk that? I thought for sure the first trip that we did like this, I was like, okay, I'm from Colorado. I grew up skiing and snowboarding. They're coming to my turf. This is, I'm going to be able to show off a little bit. And everybody that skis and snowboards in our group is insanely good. They're all great. It's crazy how athletic everybody the American Dad writing staff is. I don't like it. Like that was going to be my
right, they're
niche.
Not supposed to be. yeah.
That was going to be my thing. And when everybody's right. Then I'm nothing. I got to find something else that I'm good at.
It's always depressing when I find people who are as good at writing or comedy as I am. And also any additional thing in the world. Because for a while, I could content myself. I was like, yeah, I'd be in a stable relationship and married with kids, but I focused on comedy. What's that, Soren? You did them all? Oh, no. Then what's my excuse now?
Right. It really puts you in a really awful position when you see people who are good at the same things as you and some other stuff, another handful of things as well.
Like, right.
What? When did you even have the time?
Right. I chose to believe that you can't be funny and fit and handsome. And then Chris Hemsworth is just doing comedy now?
Oh, my God. And he's so funny.
He really is.
It's really such a bummer.
Yeah.
But I feel...
Hey, Soren, quick question. Can I tell you something embarrassing and also true about Postmates?
There's nothing I want more than to hear an embarrassing story about a business and you.
Okay, great. Here's a true thing. I would right this second unlock my phone, hand it to you, and let you look at all of my recent text messages. All of them. No judgment. And I would do the same with my photo roll. You can go through all of my photos. I stand by everything that exists in there right now. I am genuinely embarrassed to let you see my Postmates log because it's a volume thing. Like the amount of food that I get from Postmates, it's a frequency thing. The amount of times that I do it, it's the time of day thing.
Right.
Like, I'm embarrassed about nothing except Postmates because I use them so much. It's my personal food delivery and grocery delivery. Whatever I need all year round, Postmates is there. And I've truly embraced that kind of life. That it's 12:30 in the morning and I need Shake Shack, Postmates is there for me.
Right. I anticipate that I would find a lot of meals that exist outside of the normal three meals a day schedule. And like yeah, full absolutely. Meals outside of those.
Yeah, like there are times where I've fully made dinner for myself and eaten it. And then 2 hours later, I still want Postmates. I know there are other food delivery services, but this one has never let me down. They're I'm sure you know this, the largest on-demand network in the U.S., and they offer delivery from all restaurants, grocery, and convenience stores, and traditional retailers, any one of them that you could possibly want or need. And I do want and need from all of them at all times.
I'll tell you that I recently moved, and I thought for sure living in a new place that I wouldn't use Postmates as much because I'm so close to other restaurants. Hasn't changed a thing. I still use it all the time. I know they promise no more trips to the store, and they mean it.
Yeah, and it's 24 hours is the thing, you know? Like, it gets later and later in the evening, and like it gets to a certain point where it's like, well, it would be silly if I started cooking now, but if I postmated food, it would just show up.
It's been cold where you are. It's uh-huh. nice to have that option. You don't have to go out and get it.
Like, we've had ads before, but I'm legitimately no BS excited that Postmates is advertising with us because it's a service that I genuinely use all the time. And I'm very excited to tell our listeners that for a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. And once again, personally, I would blow through $100 of Postmates credits in 48 hours. But you have 7 days to do that. To start your free delivery, download the app and use code QQ. That's code QQ for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. Download Postmates and save with code QQ.
Should we get into the show?
Oh, the show. Yes.
Yeah. Hey, Soren, quick question.
Go ahead.
Now that we're talking about jokes, is there a joke you wish you could steal from another comedian? And this is like, no one would know. You were the only person who would know. And I don't even know if you would know that you stole it. If there was just a joke that you wished you had written and it would have always existed as your joke.
Yes, I do know. And I know what you're saying. Like, when a good joke comes to you, it is sort of like you grabbed 100 out of the air as it was floating around you. Yeah. Like, it just like, it does feel like none of it feels like it's yours. It feels right. Like you were just like tapped into something for a second and it gifted you this thing. Yes, there is. I can think of one like right off the top of my head from Twitter. That's always my favorite example of a joke on Twitter. And it makes me chuckle every time. It's from Bakun. Do you know who Bakun?
Yeah. I already know what it is, but say it anyway.
Okay. Bakun, it's Bakkoonn is the name of the person on Twitter. But he did a joke that there was a coloring book that had a picture of Nixon in it talking to an astronaut. And in the coloring book, it said, President Nixon talks to the astronauts on the moon. And this tweet was from Nixon saying, I'm fingering your wife's pussy, you idiot. She loves it. Says not to come back from the moon. Your son calls me dad.
It's perfect.
It's a good joke.
It's so perfect. We'll put a link in the description on the website, which I don't know if we have for this podcast or not. But if we did, we would put a link to this tweet because it's not only a perfect sequence of words. What's up?
You just described like 100 actions that I don't know how to do. Okay, great. We don't have a website, and I'm not entirely sure how to put links to things. Anyway.
Okay. All right. So we'll link it in the TikTok. Not only are the sequence of words perfect, but like it, if you see this picture of Nixon, this cartoon drawing of Nixon for a coloring book, the look in his eyes, staring straight to camera, smiling slimily.
Yeah.
It you can't look at that picture and not hear anything else in your brain other than I'm fingering your wife's pussy, you idiot.
She loves it. Says not to come back from the moon. It's like that sequence of words. It's so funny. Anyway, That's a great one. That's the one that I was like, oh, I wish that was mine.
Yeah. I feel like there are 100,000 jokes that I want to steal from John Mulaney. And already I feel like I've stolen like delivery from Mulaney and Mike Birbiglia. Like those are my two people that have informed what I've done with stand-up. Enough that the very first time I did anything resembling stand-up live, I did a moth storytelling show where you get up and there's the way that moth works. I don't even know what's still going on. I assume it is. But the topic is set in advance and it's something like something very simple and basic like cars or dates or space or water. And if you have some story to tell, you sign your name up and more people sign their names up than can go up that night. So they just like pick 20 of the 40 people that do it, that submit. And then they go and they do their 3 to 5 minute story, not like a stand-up set, not like just riffing, but like do a story on this topic. Like what I think of when I think of cars. First thing I did in that was, and it was like the first like stand-up thing I did was a moth storytelling thing that was set to cars. And I went and I did my story and I was very happy with it. And it did decently well. I did not win moth that night, but like I got laughs and claps and walked off stage and a woman came up to me and she was like, I don't know if you know this, but you really reminded me of Mike Birbiglia. And I was like, I know. I'm doing an impression of him. He could sue me right now. So I've already stolen from him and from Mulaney in later years as I've come to know and fall in love with John Mulaney's stuff. But there's a lot of like segues that he does that that aren't even jokes that I stylistically wished were mine. Like he'll say things like I went to church when I was with my parents, because you know how you lie to your parents, right? And then move on to another thing. And it's like those quick, you know how you lie to your parents, or you remember when your parents were old, those like very small, sly things that he
throwaway jokes to turn into
those things that he just sticks in there. I love so much. But the big joke of his that I wish I stole was from Kid Gorgeous, his second to most recent special, when he just talked about student loan debt. It was this whole thing about how he had given a bunch of money to his school. Where did Jack go? Georgetown? Georgian Court? Where did Jack go to school?
Yeah, he did. He went to Georgetown.
Georgetown, yeah. That's where Mulaney went. And his school post-graduation had been asking him for money. And he talked about how he'd already spent a bunch of money and was an English major and how it's ridiculous that they're asking him for money now. You should just look up the bit because it's funnier than the way I'm describing it. But watching his bit in 2018 or 2019, whenever this came out, and it's just a person doing jokes about being an English major who spent a bunch of money on college. I was like, well, I did that too. Why couldn't I have written that?
Mulaney.
it's one of the, like, there are plenty of jokes that I couldn't make because they reflect an experience that I didn't have, but there's no one better at Mulaney to make it seem like one of the harder things to do is incredibly easy. And that's what I come away with from his stand-up, where it's like his segues sometimes are like, I like that you're all here in this crowd because it reminds me of an assembly. I loved an assembly in school. And that segues into like a bunch of jokes about assemblies. And I was like, but I also went to assemblies and and I also went to a liberal arts college and got an English degree and spent a bunch of money. I should be able to do these jokes. I didn't know they were funny until John told me they were funny. Can we start over and then I do those jokes?
And you almost pretend you haven't heard them before?
Yeah.
He's absolutely wonderful. And I agree with you. Like, he's got a lot of throwaway stuff that's like jokes mean nothing to him, that they don't cost anything.
Yeah,
to make. And a lot of it's just throwaway, and they're like really funny ones that get thrown away, and that makes you feel even more like, oh, comedy's so easy. Look, he doesn't even care about that joke. He's not even giving it a proper delivery.
Right. I think my favorite one of those is he was talking about how it's a larger joke about how people used to get dressed up and wave at ships as they left ports. but the way he starts it off is like, I don't know if you know this, people in the past, they would wake up and they'd be like, oh, can't believe I have to put on all these layers. Just like a joke that no one in the past would be self-aware enough to know that they're right. wearing more layers than we are today. And it's a joke that never got like a huge laugh, but is so funny to me. Just like a person being aware that they're in the past and that things are worse.
Speaking of that, there's a joke that I've always loved from Gary Larson that I thought, like, I as a kid, I was like, I think I could have written this. Like, I feel like I could have had this. And it's the joke where it's two guys in hell and they're sitting down. There's like flames and people are being poked by pitchforks and stuff. And these two guys are just like having a rest and their clothes are singed and everything. And one guy's turning to the other one, whispering to him, I hate it here. And I love that joke so much, where like, of course you do, but, and it seems so simple. It seems like such a simple path, but I didn't write it.
Yeah. It's one of the things that makes me like very confused about comedy, because one of the reasons that I stopped doing stand-up altogether is I just felt like, I don't really think I have anything to say anymore. I'm just like another white guy complaining about problems and talking about his dick, and like dating is hard, huh? And like, we don't really need that anymore. And you see so many people who are putting inventive spins on the form and what it can do. And it's like, yeah, what Jenny Slate did with her last special is incredible. It's an amazing special that is like also part documentary, and it's unlike mm-hmm. anything I've ever seen before. And I'm so happy that it exists, and more people should be doing that. And we need more voices doing different things. And then at the same time, Mulaney will come out with a special where he's just like, I really like House Hunters, and here are some jokes about it. And just like very straightforward, thoughtful, airtight jokes. And I'm like, well, that's also good too.
Yeah. I think ultimately, I don't do stand-up anymore either. I felt kind of the same thing, where it was like, well, I felt it even at the end of writing my column back in the day at Crack, where mm-hmm. I was like, nobody wants to hear what I have to say. When we were even thinking about doing this podcast, we were like, well, who the fuck cares? There's two more white dudes having a podcast. Right.
And now we've found out everyone cares.
Yeah. So really, honestly, that was the answer. We should all get back into the things that we didn't want to do before, because we mm-hmm. thought it was too oversaturated, and realized, no, we are the best at this.
Yes.
There's no one better, according to people who listen to improv podcasts in Greenland.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I don't want to be in a bubble. So like, Bacon, what do you think? Should we keep doing this podcast? Bacon? Let's get some other voices in here.
No, financially, no. Certainly
all right. Well, he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. Don't listen to him. He's a hater. Dan, I have a quick question for you.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
What's the longest grudge you've ever held?
Oh shit. I have to do math now. Can I just say eighth grade?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, that's great. Let's see. So that would have been 13 probably.
Yeah. I want to say, I mean, that might be, when did I graduate middle school? I guess that's 1998, one of those years. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, that was my only question. We can move on.
Okay. Yeah.
What was the grudge?
It was, we're going to get real, and we're also going to get into like territory that neither of us are particularly great at talking about. But I had
never stops us.
It certainly hasn't. I had an eighth grade history teacher that was like a fun, wacky teacher. And, I don't think he liked me, and probably because I was a prick, and I was going to be challenging him on things. But he had this weird habit of saying insane things. He was like, drop a thing out there, and we were all supposed to accept it because he was quirky. And one of his little pearls was saying that the most romantic word in the English language is blueberries. And I was, again, kind of a prick, so I challenged him on a lot of things. And that was when I raised my hand and I was like, what do you mean the most romantic word is blueberries? What could you mean by that? Explain yourself, sir. This is, I've been the exact same person my entire life. I've always demanded answers and satisfaction. And he was like, blueberries. If you say it the right way, if you whisper it to a woman, blueberries, then she will melt. She will be putty in your hands.
Blueberries.
And I was like, we all need more information. And he was like, try it right now. Try it. Say blueberries and be romantic. Again, this is a world history class where like, what the fuck are we even doing anyway?
I forgot that it was world history. All right, go
and
on.
And so I said, blueberries. And he said, no, you didn't sound romantic. You sounded like a homosexual. And the class went wild. It's the kind of thing that like, what I should have done was talk to my parent or any other adult and be like, hey, I'm not positive that this guy should be saying things like that. But at the time, I didn't do any of those things because I'm immediately embarrassed. It was really crushing to me because like I had already been, I'd met plenty of gay people by the time I was in eighth grade and like had no qualms and knew it wasn't bad or wrong and wasn't, there was like no stigma. These weren't like amoral people or anything like that. They were just like anybody else. I'm lucky that I was exposed to these people, this community, early on enough in my life that my reaction wasn't like, no, I'm not. Like it wasn't like any kind of angst to be associated with this community. But I was also self-aware enough as an eighth grader in New Jersey in the 90s.
To know it's pretty damning. Yeah.
This is, you've just defined this entire year of school for me because children are the worst people in the world. And they're like, oh good. Now we can all pick on this person for this thing that will distract from whatever thing I'm self-conscious about. And it was, you know, not an entire year, but several months of that being a running gag among my friends in a playful way. And also among bullies in a less playful way of just like, hey, even the teacher agrees, to this novel idea that this clarinet playing theater kid is not the picture of masculinity in 1990s New Jersey. And it was like a thing that was like, again, I didn't like push back on him. I didn't tell my parents. They won't know until this podcast comes out. That was just like, Mr. Barth or whatever your name was, it's Barth. You've made life very difficult for me for the next couple of months. And now I'm just going to have to live with that. And I did. And like kept the kindling of that feud. I kept warm in my head for until now. Like it's still going. Yeah. I'm still like, I don't think about him almost at all, which is the best part about winning a feud. But when I do, I only think like, oh, I hope he's still like a sad old guy who's trying to make 13-year-olds feel bad while I polish my fucking Emmy.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one, Dan. Yeah.
I don't have a lot of feuds, but I have this one and I'm like, I'm really ugly about it. I'm very petty and small about it. There will always be a part of me that was like, I hope he feels bad. I'm sure he doesn't think of me, but I bet he does. And if he does, I hope he feels bad.
I guarantee he doesn't. He do like but it's so rough when there's something like being called gay, where you're like, you know, in your heart, you're like, you're dumb enough to think that's an insult, but then so is everybody who's laughing at it. And now you're fucked a little bit because like socially, who else is there but all the people who are laughing? Like there's nobody left to also know that thing with you. And so you're like, you're screwed by all these other kids who think that that's really funny. And they're going to continue to like twist that knife thinking that you are upset about it for the wrong reasons.
Right. Absolutely.
Ugh, that's rough, man. Yeah. You know, mine is also a teacher.
Really?
And it's even, yeah.
Mr. Barth?
It was Mr. Barth. Yeah. When I was in sixth grade, we had to read a book called The K. Did you ever read that?
Oh, yeah, with Timothy and that little boy.
Yes. So the basic story of it, as I remember it, is that there was a kind of like a rich kid on a boat. The boat crashes. It crashes so hard he goes blind. If that's right.
And no, he ends up. It does crash. And then he's on a small... either smaller boat or like piece of wood. And Timothy, who is the man he is with, is like, make sure you don't look at the sun, because if you do, you'll go blind. And then the kid looks at the sun and goes blind.
That's right. Okay. So yeah, it's a African-American man and a young kid, young white kid, whose family is, as I remember, has some like, there's some weird racial undertones where yes. the family has like some preconceived stereotypes. He gets to know this guy, realizes that he's great. And then the kid can see again, gets his sight back and realizes, lo and behold, this has been an African-American man he's been talking to the entire time. And we were in a class with Mr. Jennings. That was my homeroom teacher teaching this class. And I really respected him because he had once pitched for the Minnesota Twins. And
really?
I thought that was, yeah. And Kirby Puckett, of course, was my idol. So mm-hmm. I was enamored with even anyone who had been so close. And he had us write the story as if the two had never met, like what would happen when their lives. And that was just like this fun thing that he had in mind where it was like, okay, well, the kids will have to think creatively. It proves that they know the story. What happens as their lives go on if they never get in this shipwreck? And so I had written this long thing and I was really proud of it. And that was right around the time where I was writing things and being like, you know, writing is really fun. And I think I'm kind of good at this. And so I was writing this whole story about how they go on their separate ways, how the kid becomes a racist, and that's not even like the major thrust of it, but he becomes like this party boy, like a Bruce Wayne type, ends up hitting somebody with his car and running away. And the person who hit with his car was the guy. And I liked it. I got called, the paper, when I got it back, didn't have a grade on it. It just said, see me after class. And I was like, here we go. Accolades coming up.
One of those private award ceremonies.
I went and saw him after class, and I'll never forget it because he was cleaning out with one of the aquariums in his classroom with ammonia. And so like there's just like this horrible scent in the air. And he's talking to me about the story and how he's worried about me. And he's like, he thought that it was too violent, that it displayed some impulses that he thought were dangerous, and they'd like me to go see the psychiatrist at the school. He says, I see the pictures that you draw in class. And of course, I was drawing people getting blown up by bazookas and things like that because I was 11.
Yeah, what the fuck else are you going to draw?
And he says, like, I see the pictures you draw. So there was like this other real shame to it as well, where like he was observing me when I didn't think I was being observed, and really made me feel bad about this story, and that it was gross in a way that I had made something gross, and it made me even more ashamed because it was something I had been proud of until that moment, and I was so upset by it. And I was like begging him not to send me to the school psychiatrist and not to tell my parents that I had written this. And wow. Yeah, and then the next year I had taken like a short story, the teacher Mr. Hanley, who taught us some we read a lot of different short stories, and like we read some Stephen King ones and some ones that were one called The Pitchfork, I think, like where a kid kills his dad with a pitchfork, like some pretty gruesome stuff. And I was like, wait a fucking second. How come they're allowed to do it? And like there was, and these stories were really compelling to me and interesting. And I was so relieved by this teacher who had given me this. And then we wrote short stories in that class. I wrote something else that was sort of dark, and he was like, this is great. And it was the most comforting thing in the world. And it made me realize that I wasn't broken, that I wasn't wrong, and that Mr. Jennings might have been wrong. And to this day, like anytime I write anything where I'm, where it starts to like take like a really dark turn, I'm like, fucking Mr. Jennings would hate this shit.
I like that.
But like, fuck him, man.
Yeah.
I still think about it. Every time I write something dark, I'm like, yeah, think about Mr. Jennings.
It's strange the influence teachers have on us, you know? Like I feel lucky that I had a second grade teacher, and this is before I was even like thinking, way before I was thinking about writing as like a thing that would ever be in my future. But we had some kind of writing assignment that was just the sort of assignments you give to second graders to see if they can think creatively. It was like, just write something. Write a story, write anything that occupies two pages and has a beginning and an end. And I very vividly remember asking if it had to have a happy ending. And my teacher said, no. And I don't, like, I wasn't a dark child. There wasn't anything that I was trying to say. I got this freedom. And I wrote a story about bugs. I wrote so many stories about bugs as a kid because bugs rule. And it was a story about like a moth and a beetle meeting and falling in love. And in the reality of this story, moths and beetles aren't supposed to mingle. You understand? Mm. It was a Romeo and Juliet kind of thing.
It's like it predates the K.
Yeah, yeah. And then and they separated. One of them stayed in New Jersey and one of them went to Florida because in second grade, those are the only two places that I knew of. Mm-hmm. Because one of them is where Disney lived and one of them is where I lived. So they separated and they would meet up every once in a while to just like check in with each other. And it was like a very sweet, very boring, very pedestrian romance. And then at the very end, like in one paragraph, I was like, yeah, they're going to meet up again. But then on the way from Florida, the moth got caught up in a storm and died. That's it. That was the sad ending that I wanted.
A long walk to go to get to that point. Yeah. Where it's like, I had to build up all this emotional investment.
Like they don't end up together.
I really want to kill this moth. Well, yeah.
But I was glad that I was allowed to do that. I think that's a better lesson from a teacher than, no, this is dark. You should go to a shrink.
Right. And now my son is starting to do things that are creative in ways where like he's starting to draw actual pictures and, or he tells me stories at night. Like he'll just invent a story that it makes me think back on those moments. I'm like, there's nothing scarier, I think, than someone telling you like, oh no, just write anything. Like the options are limitless. You can do anything. And then you do it and they go, well, I mean, not that. Yeah. Like how horrifying that feeling is and how I never want him to feel that.
Yeah. The only other grudge I have, and it's like not as active as my one for Mr. Barth, because like that's my definition of a grudge is like, I hope something unfortunate is going on with this person's life today, which is like a terrible impulse for anyone to have. But it I don't know. That's my definition of grudge. I have another one, but it's not a grudge, but like a thing that I think about for another kid. I was in fourth grade. He was in fifth grade. I've never had a spoken conversation with this kid in my life. And every single day for a year, we would pass each other in the halls. I'm going north. He's going south. And he would push me into the wall. There was no explanation for why he was doing it. It never hurt. It was just like if I like with no real strength behind it, just like shoved your shoulders the way that Elaine does Jerry on Seinfeld. That's the kind of effort that he was putting into this. And it was really just like a dominance thing where he sees me and doesn't like something about my face or the way that I dress, which, you know, fair. And he wants to shove me into the wall. And then we both go about our days. And he did it every single day for a year. And I never pushed him back. I never like tried to counter it and use his momentum and weight to swing him into the wall and do something violent because I'm not a violent person. And it was like so perfunctory that I would be like talking to a buddy of mine walking down the hall and be like, oh, hold on, hang back a second. Frankie's got to push me into the wall. And then I got shoved and be like, okay, yeah. So as I was saying, Pokemon, right? That's pretty wild. You got to catch all of them. And
in this scenario, I didn't picture you actually walking with friends.
Everyone's.
I figured you would be mincing down the hall playing clarinet, like the Pied Piper of Hamelintown.
It's just Hamlin. But yeah, he pushed me every single day for a year. And I was just like, this is growing up. This is what a part of life is for people like me, I suppose. And like I never confronted him later. It was just like a person who has always existed in my head as like, I hope he's sad sometimes.
Yeah, it's weird. That's like it's such a weird instinct too. When somebody devastates you in some way, you don't just want there to be like some sort of a reckoning for them that they realize it and they feel badly. Like there's also the punishment aspect of it that you really, really want.
Yeah.
Like it's not just that they wouldn't do that in the future. They'd realize they were wrong and they wouldn't continue to do that. But you want them to suffer a little for having done it.
Right. An impulse I really try to tamp down because that's not how I want to live my life. And if and when I have kids, it's not the kind of world that I want to bring them into. Because I there are some Christian values that I definitely want to uphold and instill in my kids, even if I struggle to have them myself.
But it's instinctual, I think. Yeah. I think everybody feels it. And certainly everybody feels it. Look, like anything that happens with somebody getting canceled in culture, like you don't just want them to repent. Like right. That's not going to be enough. You like, they're going to have to suffer for what they did. It's like, that's like the instinct that you have. And you're like, the basis instinct is like, I want them ostracized too. I don't care if they have, if this happened a long time ago, they've become a different person since then. They've admitted that they've become a different person. They're deeply sorry for what they did. Get them out of town.
Yeah. But it's as fun as it is to nurse a grudge, it's important to remember that, not remember, but to know that, like, if this teacher that made my life difficult for a large chunk of eighth grade, famously an easy time to begin with, if he ended up getting run over by the truck that was delivering the Emmys to the ceremony where I won one, it wouldn't actually make me feel better, and it wouldn't actually make the world better. That's the thing I try to remind myself.
Does it make you feel any better to know that when he got that laugh from the kids, he probably thought, yeah, I got a good laugh off that one. That, like, he was psyched to have a laugh from some eighth graders.
I think now that I'm older, I understand him a little bit better, that I was probably, again, like a pain in the ass, a kid who was always raising his hand and always challenging. I'm sure he thought, like, now that I know teachers, there are plenty of teachers that wish they could humiliate their most irritating students. And I'm sure that's what his takeaway from this day was. Like, I don't think it was a slip or an accident. I believe he really thought, like, this fucking kid again raising his hand. I'm just trying to do a bit about blueberries. I'm a world history teacher in Hazlitt, New Jersey. Things have not worked out for me. Just shut up and let me do my tight five about blueberries. Okay, you're not going to let me do that? Then fine. I'm going to make life hard for you for a little bit.
Yeah.
I bet he walked away from that just like, that'll show him. This is a win for me, this teacher who doesn't get a lot of wins.
The adult.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the reason I asked you this question, Dan, is because the other day I called the police on somebody and it felt great.
Who'd you call the police on? Before I co-signed this joy. What was the situation?
This woman. No, sure. he wouldn't smile when I told her to smile. This guy, I was driving my son to school, and this guy was like, I see him pulling behind a car behind me because I hear a lot of honking, and like he felt like this car cut him off or something. And then he pulled in behind me as I was turning. We start down this other avenue and I'm over in the left lane. I see he's coming up really fast. So I get over into the right lane right at the same time that he's also trying to get into the right lane to go around me, even though, you know, I'm trying to let him pass on the left. And so he comes up behind me and just throws on his horn. Very, very upset. Comes up next to me and is like doing whatever the manner, like the gestures are of like, you're an idiot. What were you doing? Uh-huh. And I gave him like a, whatever, like a brush off kind of thing. And then he pulled out in front of me and brake checked me. So they had to like swerve and then flew away with his finger up. And I was so mad. And I thought about it all day and I didn't do anything all day. And then like maybe a week later, I pull up at a stoplight. I look over and there's a woman in a Tesla who looks a little concerned. And I look past her and it's fucking him. And he's yelling at her on her Tesla. And he's doing the same shit. He's talking about merging, I think. He's like putting his fingers together like, like this is how we come to get like,
you're certain
you're doing it wrong. Same guy. Yeah. Absolutely positive because I recognize his car. He then makes his turn. A taxi is in his way. He honks at the taxi, goes around it, and then brake checks the taxi. And I was like, oh, fuck. Right. And so I got his plates and called the police. And I was like, this guy's a real danger. Like, he's brake checking people. Like, something should be done. Something should be done.
Yeah.
And it felt so great to call the police on somebody. In a way that like where I if I was to tell my, you know, even my 20-year-old self that I did that, he'd be like, oh, you, what are you doing? Just like forget it.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, you don't understand. I have a son and he was in the car. We could have had to swerve into the dirt.
Can you will you describe brake checking for our listeners?
Oh, yeah, brake checking is where you drive out in front of somebody and then you throw on their brakes. It's called a brake check for like it's sort of a tongue-in-cheek term, meaning, oh, are your brakes working? Let's check. And so they have to throw on their brakes. And because the car in front is throwing on their brakes, the person behind, because of physics, has to throw them on even harder to avoid colliding with the car in front of them. Plus, there's response time and everything. So it's a really dangerous, scary thing to do.
Huh.
Did you not know what brake checking was?
No, I've never heard that term. I understood it contextually, but I'd never heard that before. No.
Well, the
did the police follow up and did they let you know that, like, yeah, we shot him. He's dead.
I mean, I wish. No, they didn't care. They didn't give a shit. But I still felt very good to report somebody like that and to tell. I hadn't told on somebody in so long in my entire life, and I told on somebody and it felt great.
Well, I'm happy for you.
Yeah, so that grudge is dead. Yeah. I satisfied it.
That was one of your shorter grudges, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, it just made me think. I was like, man, well, because afterwards I felt very petty.
Yeah.
And a little silly. And I was like, well, should I have called the police? Like, was that even necessary? It's not, and then as I was thinking about it, I was like, well, what other grudges have I ever held on to? I think I'm pretty open about letting stuff go. And then I remembered Mr. Jennings and I was like, oh my God. Yeah. No, I don't let stuff go. I just hold on to it forever.
You've never had a grudge with like a peer?
Not really.
Not like a professional peer, but like someone your own age at any point?
No, I think I'm much more forgiving, honestly. Mm. I think that if they do something that truly wrongs me, I'm like, well, they're suffering other quadrants of their life. I know what that's like. But other people, for some reason, like people that I don't feel like are on my team, older people that are older than me or like much, much younger, I don't know. Somehow it's much easier for me to be like, that's it. I'm holding on to that forever.
Yeah.
You're staying in here, buddy, and you're getting tortured. It's torture staying in my mind and replaying this moment over and over.
It's really tearing you apart how much I'm thinking about you.
Well, I think that's it, Dan. I'm going to try and find our social accounts. And while I do that,
I could just send them to you. I have them real quick. I could just send them to you if you want.
No. It's fine. I have them in a special place. It's just I can't always remember where it is. It takes me a little while to find it. But like it's important that I do it on my own, you know, so that I learn. Yeah. When you were in Thailand, we talked on the phone just a little bit and like we got cut off right as you were telling me something, but you were describing to me as a single guy, like what you look for in a woman physically. And I just want you to have the space to tell me and finish your story of like, what are the attributes like you really like in a woman physically?
See, so like I can't say smart, right?
You can say big brain, but I think even that's problematic.
Yeah, I don't even feel good about that. Oh man, I'm really in the woods here. So here's the thing. I would say physically is like physicality is like the fourth thing that I look for in a potential partner. But since you're asking specifically about physicality, I will answer you. I look for the hands of a nurturer, the hands like someone who has very clearly held a baby before. So like I'm a big hand guy, sorry to say. And
you like big hands. Got it.
Oh no. And you can tell when a woman's been crying, and I like that a lot. Because you don't want someone who keeps their emotions inside. So if you got like really strong and deep cry crevasses in the face, that's a big one for me. I believe there's some science on how big-heartedness leads to big-shoulderedness. So like strong shoulders, that's another win. No one too tall. And blue eyes.
And blue eyes.
If I find out that I've just described Tom Brady, I'm going to be very upset. Just big hands, broad shoulders, and blue eyes.
And a crier. All right. On Twitter, you can follow Daniel at DOB_Inc.
Yeah, but don't.
You can follow me, Soren, at Soren_LTD. Also, Dan's DMs are open. Or you can follow Quick Question at QQ_Soren and Dan. We also have an email address, which is QQ with Soren and Daniel@gmail.com. We have an Instagram, but don't fucking bother. And we have a Patreon too, which is patreon.com/quickquestion, one word. And then Gabe, I don't remember what your contact is.
Yeah, it's www.gabeharder.com.
Okay, www.gabeharder.com. He's our sound engineer, our producer.
I didn't think Gabe wanted to be associated with this show.
Yeah, and then one day he suddenly had a website. It may not be up, but you can go look at a little coming soon banner.
Whoa!
And yeah, cartoon dog eating ice cream. Okay, I think that's everything.
Bye.
Bye.